Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Surgery Endorsement Maintenance Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Alexis Foreman. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Gwen. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for calling in to the Surgery Endorsement Maintenance Work Group D conference call. And before we begin, I'd like to see if we have any measure developers on the call with us this morning.
Jane Hahn is here from STS.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Jessica Reilly from Ingenix.
Hi, Jessica.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Kay Schwebke from Ingenix.
Hi, Kay.
Good morning.
Do we have anyone else?
This is Steve Finley from Consumers Union.
Okay. Hello. Okay, now I would like to go over just some logistics just quickly regarding our in-person meeting on February 28th. On Monday, February 7th, you should have received a logistics memo from Benita Henry here at NQF, and she requested that you complete the lodging request form and fax it back to her. If you haven't done so, please fax her that form by Friday, so by tomorrow, February 18th. She needs that information. And in that memo, she laid out instructions on how to schedule travel arrangements. Did anyone not receive that email from her? Okay. And I'm going to now turn the call over to Melinda Murphy.
Thanks, Alexis. So what we want to do today in terms of achievements is to provide an opportunity for those of you who have reviewed the measures and been identified as a lead for discussion of the measures to talk about what you saw, what your impressions are with respect to the measures meeting the criteria for endorsement, any concerns or particular items that you would want to highlight related to the measures that you reviewed, and have an opportunity for the group to talk about any differences or anything that they would want to add to that. And this is really a preliminary activity in preparation for your leading the discussion about these measures at the meeting at the end of the month. Each of you who's identified as a lead will be the one who is leading the discussion or leading off the discussion about the measures at the face-to-face meeting. What I want to go ahead now, in case you're looking at the agenda, and give you the information that's really scheduled to come at the end of the call today, so I'm not repeating myself and using up your time to do so. During the discussion of the measures at the meeting, what you will be expected to do as the lead is introduce the measure by its number, its title, and a description of the measure, and then within each of the criteria, to speak to how you see the measure meeting that criterion. At the end of your presentation, which I would say to you will need to be very focused, succinct, and to the point so that we can finish all of the measures in the two-day period of time. But at the end of your presentation about each of the criteria, there'll be an opportunity for the full steering committee to discuss it. And at the end of that time, there will be a vote using an electronic gadget, which I've not yet seen, but which Alexis has facility with. So there'll be a vote on the extent to which each of the measures meet each of the criteria, importance, scientific acceptability, usability, feasibility, and the overall vote on the measure meeting the criteria. Obviously, if the measure is deemed as not being important, there would not be any point in further discussing it. As I look at the way in which you've evaluated the measures, I don't think that's going to occur. In terms of the voting, Alexis is going to provide a demonstration, or she and Jessica together, on the first morning of the steering committee meeting. That'll be 8:30 in the morning in executive session. So in addition to serving you breakfast, there will be an opportunity for the co-chairs. That's Dr. Arden Morris, who is on the call with us today, and Dr. David Torchiana, to outline their expectations of how the meeting will proceed and what needs to be done to move it through all of the work that's there to be done. And there will be a demonstration of the voting activity with an opportunity for you to practice, so that when we go into the open meeting at 9 o'clock, people should feel comfortable with using the apparatus for doing so. Any questions about what I just said?
This is Bob Sama in Rochester. When you talk about being the lead, has there been something sent around that was the individual thing? I look at all these documents. I don't see anything that associated one of us with a specific measure other than just the group.
There was a document that went out, and Alexis, you can tell us the date that that went out, that did identify each of the measures and one of the group associated with those measures.
It was the materials that went out on January 21st, the measure evaluation materials, and within that briefing memo document, there was a table, and that table listed the assigned measures for the work group, and in parentheses, it listed which steering committee member was designated lead for a particular measure.
I have that table, but I don't see any parentheses. I mean, there's five people here listed for measure 116. I'm included in that. The six people, 118, there's the six people included in that. So I don't see a specific person being, say, you are the lead and will be responsible for presenting. I mean, every one of the measures that my name is associated with, it's associated with the same six other people.
Yeah, I don't remember getting something else yet either, Alexis. I'm looking at my emails. You said it was the 31st?
Yeah.
No, the 21st of January, when I sent out the measure evaluation form.
Yeah, I would say, this is Steve, I would say that it took me a while to notice this as well. I mean, maybe in the future it should be attention should be called to that a little bit more prominently. Because when I first read the materials, I didn't see it. I just was kind of buried, and then all of a sudden I noticed, oh, I'm kind of responsible for particularly looking at one of these very carefully.
Okay. Well, we'll be sending out another document today or tomorrow, and it will list, we'll send out another table with the designated discussion lead, and it'll be the third column in the table, and it'll list each committee member's name, and in parentheses we'll have the measure in which you're the designated lead for. So it'll be a little bit more clear.
Great. That would be helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask right now, the way in which we've got this identified is Ruth Klontel would have 116, Curtis Collins would have 118 and 1479, Connie Steed would have 130, Stephen Findlay would have 300, Christina Sambricki would have 217, and Robert Simo would have 218.
Okay. All right. Let's move. All right.
Okay, so other questions? Sorry, I'm getting a lot of noise on my phone.
Yeah, occasional static here too as well.
Okay, so unless that gets really distracting, let's try to go ahead and continue. If it gets really distracting, we'll hang up and dial back in. Any other questions? Okay, so if there aren't any other questions, what we'd like to do is have you, each of you, as assigned with the measures, and if you're only this moment learning it, I apologize, and we will deal with it, as Alexis has already outlined and on the call today as we need to. But if you had identified, but let me say this. At the meeting, while you will be leading off the discussion about the measure to which you've been assigned, you will be expected to have reviewed all of the measures, perhaps not with the fine-tooth comb and the level of detail you will have reviewed the ones you're presenting, but to have reviewed all of the measures because the steering committee as a whole is expected to engage in the discussion of the measures, and each and every member of the steering committee will be voting on each of the measures. So you'll want to feel comfortable that you know and understand the measures going into the meeting. If there's not any other question, then we can start off. Ruth Klompel, if you're comfortable with doing so, to start off with 116 and just highlight, there's not a need to discuss it in great detail, but just highlight what you saw and provide an opportunity for the others on the group here to raise any question or comment they might have, and then we'll move through them one after the other.
Okay, sure. So the first measure is 0116, which is antiplatelet medication at discharge. And this is focusing in on percent of patients aged 18 and older undergoing isolated coronary bypass surgery who are discharged on antiplatelet medications. In terms of, the criterion, and it looks like just in briefly reviewing all of our ratings, we had general consistency in terms of rating with respect to criterion 1, A, B, and C in terms of impact, that it does have a demonstrated high impact aspect of healthcare, that it affects, large numbers of individuals, et cetera. In terms of the summary of evidence, we were given a number of citations that related to utilization of this in clinical practice and the benefits of it, as well as in terms of 1C, the evidence to support the measure. The background information, obviously, are that, while aspirin therapy was accepted as the cornerstone of treatment for coronary artery disease, it has proven benefit in this treatment group, but additionally, antiplatelet therapy, other aspects are recommended. Now, my one comment, this was actually the first measure that I read, and so I had documented in my comment that I rated the criterion high, but I was uncertain if the numerator should also include just focusing in on patients who met the criteria for use, because some patients may not be candidates for antiplatelet medication at discharge, for instance, if they have a bleeding disorder. But then after I got in the habit of reading, the format, I realized that was indicated within the text of the criterion itself. Obviously it's focused only in on patients who meet the criteria. So that was my comment there, but in going through them, I found that was there as well. So with respect to that, I know that briefly in looking again at our ratings for the set of measures for the second aspect in terms of scientific acceptability, criterion 2, it looked like we had some consistency, some individuals rating some of these as not applicable. So I guess we'll have further time for discussion as to why we indicated these at the main meeting itself. But for the most part, I think we identified that the measure as stated the numerator being the number of patients undergoing isolated Cabot surgery who were on discharge at antiplatelets medication therapy, and the denominator being all patients undergoing isolated bypass surgery. We, for the most part, rated the scientific acceptability aspect pretty consistently. And I don't know how much, since I'm going first, I don't know, you know, in terms of a format you want me to follow, because I know we're going to have further discussion at the meeting itself. So is the intent today just to briefly go over criterion one and two? And
This is Arden speaking. Part of our, yes, that is part of it, is just to briefly run through and make sure everybody's really familiar. But also, it's really important for us to identify measures or parts of measures where we need more information in order to make a decision that we feel comfortable with. So this, so listening in are some of the measure developers, and this gives them a heads up about specific questions that we may have in our in-person meeting, gives them an opportunity to go back, gather the data if they need to, so that they can address these questions as we query them in our in-person meeting. So this serves several purposes. I have a question. Alexis, Melinda, is it okay if we interrupt during this presentation to ask questions around specific parts of the criteria, or would you prefer that we just kind of hold questions until the summarizer is done?
I think, assuming the whole group feels comfortable with this, it's usually useful to ask a question at the time the subject is open.
Okay. So I have a question around number two, and Ruth, I'm thinking that, this is Arden again, I'm thinking you may be the best person having, being sort of in charge of presenting this measure to us. My question is, did you feel comfortable with how much variation there is in the performance of this measure? Is it meaningful because there is adequate variation in performance, or is everybody basically doing the right thing, and is there very little variation? We don't want for hospitals to be charged with doing something that's unnecessary by going out and collecting this measure if everybody's already, granted, yes, it is very important, but if everybody's already doing it. So can you give me your perspective on that, or give us all that, your perspective on
that? Well, my perspective, you know, from clinically and just from the minimal data that I've looked at, and obviously I didn't know till this
yes.
morning that I was yes. in charge of this, so I'll do some further review in terms of the literature and the strength of the literature, but you know, I am seeing it used in clinical practice as a measure that's being tracked, and I do think it has significance. So,
oh, yeah, no doubt. It definitely has significance. But if there is a meaningful difference in performance among hospitals, then it would be more useful as a measure to get the guys that aren't performing as well as they should kind of up to the bar.
Okay.
But if there is no difference in performance, if everybody is doing a good job on this important measure, then it may be less useful to be for this to be sort of chased around.
I see.
I don't know the answer. That's okay. I just wanted to raise the question.
Yeah, I see what you mean, and that's an important point, because if everyone's doing it and they have, you know, high compliance and there's little variation, then how do you look to not even just for individual improvement, but even for benchmarking purposes as well?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. This is Steve Finley. The question I asked is this, you know, the term I always hear is a top-down measure, where this is so widely adhered to that it's become less meaningful.
Okay. So just to register that as an issue, I don't want to interrupt you for too long here. Let me have you go ahead and continue with the presentation that you're putting together. Doing off the cuff.
Yeah, I'm doing this off the cuff. I noted, you know, we had more comments under one than we did under the criteria for number two, but I noticed that, and I don't know if you're on the call, Kristen, he had indicated it was unclear as to whether if aspirin was contraindicated and a patient was placed on Plavix, the measure would be considered to have met. He also cites the exclusion criteria only speaks to a contraindication to aspirin, but does not require that an alternative be used. Is Kristen on the call or no? Doesn't sound like it, but I know that he had...
So that's another question that we should keep track of.
Yeah, I noticed that in the ratings he had indicated that on his score sheet. So I guess just another aspect for consideration. But for the most part, within our section, we didn't have too many... Well, we didn't have any other comments listed for you know, our independent ratings of the of all of the subcomponents of testing and analysis. Okay, I'm going over to usability, which is criterion 3. And I'm going off what you sent, Alexis. Hold on, I'm trying to get in my... Okay, so in terms of the criterion set 3, which is usability, extent to which the intended audiences can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision-making, and these subcategories include the meaningfulness, understandability, interpretation, and I think, you know, for the most part, the way the measure is stated, it certainly is clear. We had one comment from a reviewer, how is the measure treated within the composite score? I'm not seeing who said that, but that was really the only comment for the ratings for the for criterion 3. And then for 4, which is feasibility, again, just looking at our overall ratings, we did have consistency in how we rated those. We had a few comments. 4 looks at feasibility, the extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and can be implemented for a performance measure. We had a few comments here, but everyone's saying for the most part partially met, and I guess we'll have further discussion on this at the meeting in terms of the subcategory ratings, but some comments indicated partially met, but with additional information as specified in the comment-specific sections, with assessment as to what the numerator needs to specify for patients meeting the criteria to receive antiplatelet discharge at medication. But again, that was clarified within the text writing within this measure description. So I guess that I'm going to stop my overview I'll defer to you as to really the preferred format you have for continuation of the discussion of this.
So if any of the other members of the group have additional comments or any differences in terms of the way in which they viewed it, this would be a good time to mention those. And if there are none, then we could go on to the next measure.
The only thing I was wondering about, this is Bob, is the STS data set, using that. It's my understanding that you don't have to be a participant of the STS data set and still do cardiac surgeries at different hospitals. I mean, is there a mandate that STS be used? Because that's what it seems to be, that the Steward agreement and all that, and using the STS data set. And the other thing is STS data sets are notoriously behind, usually lagging somewhere between 6 months to a year behind for institutions. How does that factor into this? Even though you have a data sample set, we have a huge STS data group here, and they're still almost a year behind in entering their data. How do we monitor that?
In terms of the measure, and Jane Hahn is online from STS, and she may want to respond as well. This is Melinda Murphy. There's not a requirement that the STS database be used as a systematic database. However, the information for these STS measures is drawn from the STS database in that that is the only database to which they have access. Jane, is there anything else you would want to add to that?
No, not necessarily, or not at all, I don't think. I think you covered it pretty well. Just for measures in general, even though STS is the developer, we provide all the specifications within the document so that the person who's not participating in the database can also compute the measures. So the only reason why the data is presented the way it is because we have to provide using the data we have access to, the reliability and validity of the measures, which is the STS data. But as far as a participant or a hospital that is not a participant of the STS database, they can go ahead and use the specifications provided and the resources we've provided to calculate the measure or measures.
Okay, so that was because that was my I was misunderstanding it because it seemed like everywhere in here it was mentioning STS, and I was just well I know there are some hospitals that aren't participating in STS, and so I was like, how does this work? So they would basically be given the criteria for doing the performance. They'd be given the audit sample that they would have to pull against, and then use your criteria for that.
Well, they would use the specifications for the measures, numerators, denominators, and the definitions that we've provided to calculate. My understanding is to calculate the measures. Isn't that NQF how it works at NQF, Melinda?
For measures that have
a developer, we don't have to use, for instance, if it's an ACS NSQIP measure, we don't have to use the NSQIP database to compute the measure, but they provide, as STS provides, the measure specifications that somebody in the public can use to compute the measures.
Well, when the measure is evaluated and endorsed, it is evaluated and endorsed based on the measure specifications that are submitted with the measure.
Right.
So to the extent the measure specifications indicate that the information is from the STS database, then that would be the expectation about where the way in which the measure could be evaluated for validity and reliability based on that database. So to the extent that information is drawn from other databases that have not been fully harmonized with the STS database, I think there would be the question legitimately on the part of a group and on the part of NQF about whether or not the outcome of the use of the measure would be the same.
Yeah, that's my main concern is perhaps not with STS because I know the vast majority of cardiac surgical practices, at least in academic centers, participate in STS. But we're drawing upon, we're already having a selection bias basing our data on this. You know, I mean, I'm not arguing at all with the rationale for putting antiplatelet therapy on someone post-CABG. I mean, I think the literature is convincing on that. The real question is the methodology here. I mean, we're using, you know, what are the aspirin at discharge? It was a 96.9% agreement rate, you know, all these different things. But if you use one data set to develop this, and that's what we're basing that, well, we think there's a need, there's a performance gap, but we may not actually be looking at the real world yet. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the real world is. That was what I'm trying to answer is, as these measures come along using individual data sets to promote them, I mean, how do we know what the real world is? Because even using NSQIP, it's looking at 300 and some odd hospitals. You know, there are 5,300 hospitals in the U.S. That becomes an issue of are we comparing apples and oranges? And are we're raising certain standards that are not, in other words. I mean, I'm not arguing with the measure. I think the measure is a good measure. I support it. But I just want to make sure for face validity as we go out talking to people about this, is that an issue that needs to be discussed? And what other ways do we have other ways of making this verified or the validity of this so that we can say, yes, STS is a good representation of cardiac surgical practice. We think there's a performance gap. This is the measure. These are the criteria. And maybe I'm not articulating my question right.
No, that's a good point. And this is actually Ruth. You know, I had one other comment when I was reviewing some of this, and it goes back to our previous discussion of, you know, what level of variability do we want to see or variation in practice should we see to identify that there is a true performance gap. When I look at some of the, you know, data in the tables and the graphs, the mean was 96.8. It varies from 85% compliance up to 100. So when we look at mean and median compliance rates and such, is there a recommended level of variation we should see that we say, yes, you know, there is a good degree of variability in this measure, and therefore, you know, there could be increases for improvement if we indicate it as a measure that should be identified. Does NQF specify anything, or obviously it's probably measure dependent as well?
Again, and stop me if I'm not getting to the point properly. The measures are evaluated as they are specified using the full specifications that are submitted with the measure. So that if a measure is endorsed for quality improvement and public reporting, then when publicly reported, there should be the information that clearly specifies what that measure is, so that anyone who is looking at it understands the database from which the information was drawn. One of the things that the group is going to be discussing is harmonization. And when you get the materials for the meeting, there will be a report from NQF about harmonization. So not just STS measures, any other measure from which the data is drawn from a specific database will be open to a discussion. If there are similar measures out there available for use, are they harmonized, and to what degree are they harmonized? Did I get to your question?
A little, but I think my comment more pointed to the beginning of the discussion. I forget who asked. I don't know if it was Alexis or someone else on the call. You know, that one of the things we need to consider is there variation currently that exists in clinical practice, and so would it be meaningful to retain this measure, or is it meaningful? Are there meaningful differences in performance that currently exist?
Okay, so that's the topped out. Is it topped out? Is it at the best it's going to get?
Right.
And in the discussions, I think sometimes whenever a measure is the performance against the measure is 90%+. It's a question that comes up, and in the discussion, there will be occasions whenever the group agrees, whatever group, not just this group, but any group might agree that for various reasons it is appropriate to continue the measure, and for others there will be some agreement that it is, that you would recommend not continuing or retiring the measure.
Okay, fine.
So it's not hard and fast, like almost anything you're going to be discussing is not going to be hard and fast.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Anything else with this measure? Are you ready to move on and have a discussion about the next one?
Yeah, that's fine.
So, Curtis Collins.
Yeah, hi. I've got both 118 and 1479 here, which are I'm glad they're back to back because they're both very similar. 118 is a maintenance measure, and then 1479. And I know we have people on the call. I believe Jessica and Casey from Ingenix is a new measure. Both of these measures look at patients discharged or receiving statin or lipid-lowering therapy after CABG. And so I'll start with 118 because that is, you know, the existing measure. And I think, much like in 116, the measure we just discussed, I do think it is still important. And looking through our response, I think, for the most part, except for maybe Steve, who again questioned whether the measure was topped out with the compliance rate, you know, I personally do feel that this is still an important measure. And, you know, that's, you know, we can discuss kind of, you know, whether things are topped out and that, you know, along with all of these. But if anything, I think it's still definitely does have importance here to get patients on lipid-lowering agents after CABG. I guess I'll move on. Scientific acceptability, much like in 116, it is you know, I think it's very scientifically sound. It's a numerator, denominator. Did patients receive lipid therapy at discharge? Did they not? And, you know, the statistics are pretty straightforward to me. And looks like most people rated that as a C, for the most part. The only question that I had a P in 2B, 2D, excuse me. And that's similar to, the exclusion criterion 116, where there, I think there, the article mentioned that there is differences between NQF, and STS on some of their exclusion criteria, and those, and there's a plan to resolve those, again. So I thought that was a very minor issue. I have confidence that those will be ironed out, but as it stands, I put it as a partial there. Usability, I thought, the usability of this measure was, complete as far as the measure, stands now. Most people rated it on all three usability recommendations as completely meeting criteria, except for 3C, which, Steve, you had a P for topped out, you know, again, the issue with outliers and being topped out. Usability, feasibility, I'll move on to that. I think this is very feasible. The only question is really hospitals that do not have electronic medical records. I think it may be a little more difficult there. And we had one comment on that. Otherwise, almost across the board, it was completely, met criteria. And, you know, kind of to summarize the rationale, I think there was strong, clinical evidence. I think it's usability and feasibility are both strong. So, as with an existing maintenance measure, I think this is, you know, completely meets a lot of our criteria. Any question on that one before I move on to the other measure, which I'll explain the differences?
No, I'd be really interested in explaining the differences, because I'm still a little bit befuddled by why they're basically almost exactly the same.
Yeah, they are, and maybe, you know, the folks from NGenX, I think, is the company, can kind of explain that. As far as I see, the difference is, as far as the proposal goes, it's still measuring lipid-lowering medications. It's just, you know, kind of the process of the measurement. So in Proposal 1479, the key component is really using pharmacy data at 7 days to see if there was a pharmacy prescription for lipid-lowering medication. And also, it's also only within kind of the existing customers. I believe this measure is up and running for, I saw one mention of 16 million. I saw another measure of 40 or 60 million. So it is up and running. However, I don't know if everyone would have access, and I was hoping for a little more comments from the people who submitted the measure on this.
Hi, this is Kay Schwebke. I'm happy to address the question that's been raised. I think it's an excellent one. And conceptually, the measure that we submitted is conceptually identical to the one that was discussed earlier. The major difference is we've really tried to increase the ability to use the measure. The earlier measure is limited in the way it goes about gathering information, which is very dependent at this point on participation in a registry program. But this measure, because it's now been operationalized to use administrative claims, which are going to be submitted because there's costs related to the care that's being provided here, we can really operationalize the use of this measure and have a broader look at the compliance to providing this type of therapy. So that's really the primary difference, is this one is able to go beyond the registry, is able to use administrative claims, which means that there'll be broader use and a better understanding of what care patterns truly exist.
Where are you going to get that? So the hospital is going to be said,
if they give a prescription for the lipid-lowering agent and they document they gave it, but let's say the patient doesn't fill it.
That's a great question. So the advantage of administrative claims is if the care took place, a billing will occur and will capture that data. The limitation of administrative claims is that if a prescription is sent to a pharmacy but the patient never picks it up, you are correct that we would then miss that because a claim would never be submitted.
So then the hospital could theoretically, or the practitioner could theoretically be penalized, quote unquote, for use, the way this measure is set up, even though they did the right thing.
You have hit on the limitation of administrative claims.
So
this would only capture things that actually occurred. We would miss information like the treatment being recommended, patients refusing, patients not going to the pharmacy to actually fill those prescriptions.
And that's my main concern is, you know, we need to make sure that if we're going to attribute these measures to individuals or institutions, that they need to have in their control the ability to, they need to be accountable. And they are, my concern in this measure was that
yep.
You seem to be taking the accountability, the attribution still goes to the hospital and or provider. But the accountability for completing it is no longer in their control.
With one exception to that statement, the earlier measure also does allow the submission of G-codes, which at least demonstrate that an anti-lipid treatment was provided at discharge. So if a provider sent a prescription to a pharmacy and if they submit a G-code, so this is different from a pharmacy prescription being filled, a bill generated, and that becoming a claim, the provider does still have the opportunity in this algorithm to submit that G-code that at least says, hey, at the time of discharge, I prescribe this treatment. The key here is just like the earlier measure, something needs to happen, which a provider needs to indicate that the recommended care did take place.
Can you talk about the differences in numbers of hospitals that this would pick up as opposed to the first measure?
Oh, it would be tremendously different. Maybe the STS person can let us know what the most recent prevalence is as far as the percentage of hospitals are participating. But basically, this is going to be able to touch all the practitioners. It won't just be touching a percentage of hospitals who decided to participate in the registry program.
It's Melinda. I'm interrupting and recognize I'm doing so. What we really would like for you to be able to do today with respect to the questions that you have for the developers is to raise those questions as opposed to having an in-depth discussion, because we do not have a wide audience here today. We do not have all the steering committee members, and we want you to be able to have this discussion at the steering committee meeting. So that said, if you can raise the questions or raise the issues that you're going to be looking for more information about, then the developers have the time to put that together and for the discussion to occur at the steering committee meeting. The other thing I want to say with respect to each of these measures is while you're talking about them as compared to one another, I just want to say that at the meeting, you will be voting on each measure individually as specified. Then there will be an opportunity for those measures that are similar or competing to be discussed in terms of which one would be considered best in class, or is there a reason to have them both? Thanks.
This is STS also, if I can just add a sentence or two. We actually will have our surgeon experts representing us at the meeting in person and by phone. at the end of the month. So if you have any questions, I think that would be the best time to ask them. I'm just the administrative party, and so I'm the person who puts the forms together, and I work with our surgeon leadership, but they are really the experts in the field, both in statistics and clinically. So any questions you have, I can take them today, bring those questions to our leadership, and then help them prepare for the meeting at the end of the month.
I would just to close this out, since to eugenics or Ingenics, I would say, what's the value added, and how are you going to make adjustments for attribution? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. We're going to be, these measures are reflecting the performance of practitioners in hospitals. They're already struggling as it is, and we want to make sure they're not going to be penalized for doing the right thing, but the measure doesn't pick it up because of the way it's set up. That's my main concern. I would like an explanation for basically why is this value added compared to the other measure, and how are we going to, because it's sort of out of the control of the practitioner and stuff to some extent, how are we going to define this accountability and attribution thing as far as the measure? That's my main concern.
And, you know, I think to maybe to wrap up, I think in general, I think they're both important, you know, both pretty acceptable as far as usability and acceptability. I think the big issue here is the harmonization and the competing kind of similarities between the two. So, and, you know, like Alex or someone said, we can, you know, discuss further at the meeting. But I think as far as the conference call today, I think we've kind of hit on a lot of the key issues.
Okay, so if you're ready to move on to the next one, Connie Steed is the individual identified as the lead on 130. But if, as you, since everybody's sort of starting at the same place today, if there's anything that anybody wants to bring out, highlight, or raise as a question that you'd like the developers to come to the February 28 meeting with answers to, go ahead and raise those. There was one comment that I noticed about the NISN data, and at some point the NISN definition that's applied to CABG being different from the STS definition. So that would be something I am assuming that the group would want to have some feedback from STS about at the meeting.
I'm sorry, Melinda, our definition is different from, I just want to make sure I get your question done correctly.
CDC's NISN surgical site infection data.
Okay.
Or their definition, I'm sorry, with respect to CABG. Anything else on 130?
They also have a different risk adjustment, too. That would also need to be considered.
Okay. So Jane, risk adjustment and definition.
Risk adjustment. Are we talking about number 130?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So then...
Did we do 300 is me, Steve. We finished with 130 already?
Absent any additional comments or questions, and we are.
All right. All right, so 300 is cardiac patients with, and I should preface my launch into my introduction here by saying I'm not, unlike I think most of you, a clinician or a provider. I'm a consumer advocate. And so I leave the I can't really address those per se. This measure 300 is, I think we've got some static on somebody's.
This is Gwen, the operator. Christine Zimbricki has joined us, but I'm going to mute her line.
Okay. Sounds like she's home.
Yeah.
With the kids. This measure is cardiac patients with controlled 6 a.m. post-op glucose. It is a maintenance and process measure. It's been in use since 2001. It is the measure steward here is CMS, and the Joint Commission uses this as well. CMS uses it in RACTIPU and has since 2007, and also used, as I said, by the Joint Commission. There's nationwide collection of data on this. The measure is, according to the document, the NQF document, is going to be retooled for, I guess, one of several dozen or something that we're going to hear about this week and next week about being retooled for electronic health records. In the scoring, there was some mixed response. Connie said no and gave it a low score on importance. All others said yes. Ruth and Bob appeared to also have some issues with this measure on importance and rationale, so probably worthy of some discussion. Ruth and Bob both scored the importance and rationale minimal or not at all. Questions were also raised in the scoring about whether the 6 a.m. value or quote unquote within 24 hours is best and accurate and best serves the purpose of quality improvement. Questions also were raised about whether this measure accounts for variability in practice or whether it's not too vague and quote unquote poorly designed. In some of the comments. So perhaps Connie and or Ruth and or Bob could comment, since they took exception to the meaningfulness of this measure.
Well, I guess this is Ruth, and just from some of our clinical experiences we had when this first came out, you know, it was recommended, we had difficulty with trying to meet it by 6 a.m. for those patients who had a late surgical operative time or who had issues, with hyperglycemia, even though starting them on intensive insulin couldn't get them to the recommended range by 6 a.m. However, I will say that clinically we have changed our practices where we're working more intimately with the surgery team to, you know, start intensive insulin during the surgical procedure if their glucoses are trending higher. And now we are able to We've definitely seen improvement in our ability to meet this by the 6 a.m., but I guess there's still, within the clinical arena, you know, some thought as to, is a 6 a.m. the most accurate timeline for trying to meet that? So that's why I had that comment on there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Do others have comment on that?
Well, I mean, I can comment. I mean, I think from the get-go, this is a poorly designed measure.
Mm-hmm.
The data supporting it is somewhat marginal. It's very focused on a very limited scope of patients in certain situations. We've been doing this in 2004, and the overall rates have been unchanged. The design is very vague, as opposed to some of the other ones, you know, the skip ones, like skip one, you know, 60 minutes within incision, but this is sort of like 6 a.m., but it can vary from if you got a glucose at 2 a.m., the most recent glucose in the morning before 6 a.m. It doesn't account, like Connie just said, for, you know, a patient who has a CABG first thing in the morning and is out in the ICU by noon is very different than the patient that's in the ICU who finishes their CABG at 7 or 8 o'clock at night and hits the ICU and then gets a glucose at 3 a.m. and they're still on pressors or something, as opposed to the guy who came out at noon and was able to be weaned off all their pressors by midnight, and that's a totally different patient. And so, yes, I mean, a lot of people have put a lot of effort into gaming the system now. I mean, I tour around a lot of hospitals. There are people that just leave patients on insulin drips for no good reason other than to meet these measures, and there have been significant downsides to that. So, I mean, I think this whole measure of all the NISQIP measures, or I mean, of all the SCIP measures, has been the one that has been the most poorly designed and implemented, and to my mind, reviewing the literature, is probably the one on the weakest scientific basis that we have. So. That's, I mean, yes, it's about, it's, you know, yes, if you're going to do it, it's fine, but there are so many problems with it that it's marginally valuable in my view.
Thanks. Are there other comments on this? Any proposal about how we would lead the discussion on this? Since this is a heavily clinical issue, unfamiliar to me, of course, as I said, I mean, I can raise this issue in the meeting on the 28th and March 1st, but I would ask for assistance in full discussion per what you just said. Is that Bob?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll be there, but I'm just saying that, I mean, I don't even know if on one of our original phone calls, our role is not to say this is a bad measure.
Right, right.
I mean, we're not in that place. I mean, my view is
to raise these issues.
This is a bad measure. It has been a bad measure since it was instituted, but I don't see it changing. But I just think there's so many compared to the other things, the way it's been designed. This one really should be completely retooled, redesigned, I just think it's overall. But that's why I had so many marginals on it and partials.
Right.
Right, and this is, Ruth, as I said before, you know, in clinical practice, it was very difficult to meet this. And, you know, as Bob had said, we're keeping some of our patients on intensive insulin therapy in order to meet this. And so is that beneficial? So, you know, you're right. I think...
And your deep sternal wound infection rate probably hasn't budged a bit related to this. Yeah, I mean, it's the question is it really value-added? It was a rush to judgment on one study, which has subsequently shown... actually probably for certain patients who don't need it to be intensive insulin therapies deleterious to them. So I think, you know, it's should be just reworked in my opinion.
So the downsides of intensive insulin therapy, are there good studies on that? Are there?
Well, there's a body of literature, not only in cardiac surgery, but in ICU patients that showcases the role of euglycemia, you know, 80 to 100, 80 to 150 in decreasing ICU mortality and in decreasing, bacteremia. But even in the ICU setting, there's still a lot of controversy because it differs between a medical ICU patient versus a surgical ICU patient. So,
right.
You know, we've seen people use Greet Vandenberg's 80 to 110 range, and now we're seeing that they're going up to 150. And I think in the critical care arena, there's still controversy on what's the best way to manage ICU patients in general, in addition to cardiac surgery patients specifically.
And the question is those were tertiary care, high acuity, and while cardiac surgery is intensive therapy, there's a huge difference between the re-op CABG or CABG mitral valve that's done at a place like the Mass General or Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic, as opposed to the first time two vessel CABG and a guy who's never had surgery that's done in the community hospital. And if they're trying to meet these measures, the question is, are we adding a lot of work to patients for very little value and possible harm? There have been patients who have become hypoglycemic, have had events that I'm aware of in the state of Minnesota, where patients were on insulin drips. The insulin drips were not managed appropriately. The patients, you know, and they bottom out, and they've had neurologic events related to these. So, I mean, the anecdotal, of course, but I'm just saying the measure, you know, the data that brought the measure about was a very small select group of patients. And as Connie said, the critical care literature is all over the map now. How intense should it be? Is it less than 200? Is that good? The data would suggest now for really sick patients, it needs to be, you know, 100 or lower. Do you want to have everyone 100 or lower? I mean, I think that would be dangerous. So there's a lot of issues with this.
Great. Thank you very much for those comments. Anyone, any further comments? Okay, well, so sounds like we have some, anyone want to come to the defense of this measure? Otherwise, I'd say that there's a good statement here of a serious problem.
Well, I don't want to, you know, leave our conversation with the fact that it's not a good measure, quality indicator focus. Certainly, you want to have patients who have controlled, you know, glycemic control, and glycemic variability has actually been looked at now as more important rather than just like the mean glucose level. So it certainly has its place in all critically ill patients and cardiac surgery patients. I think the question is identifying a 6 a.m. postoperative glucose the best way to categorize it? So,
yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. So in terms of what you said, Bob, that a retooling of this measure, a restructuring of it, and Ruth as well, is probably something that should be actively discussed later this month. If that's appropriate. Is that, in fact, appropriate? I mean, you know.
It's Melinda. It is appropriate. Again, you'll vote on the measure as it is specified. If it does not pass the steering committee vote as specified, then there is an opportunity for the steering committee to identify conditions under which they would find it meeting all of the criteria.
And how does that process work, just briefly? It's basically you send it back to, so we would essentially be, I mean, in theory, this could be voted down and send back to CMS for retooling.
With, in terms of what the committee would send it back with, would be specific recommendations about what should be changed to make it acceptable in terms of meeting the criteria. And at the meeting, the developer will be present, and depending upon the extent, they will have a sense about whether or not that's something they can do or whether they need to take it back to the organization to look at it there. And then there will be opportunity beyond that to revisit it as the project goes forward. Does that help?
Yeah, that's help. Thank you.
Okay.
So that's unless there are any further comments on that one, we can move to the next one. Anything else going once, going twice on this one?
Okay. So, Christine, 217 is assigned to you for review. Were you aware of that, and are you prepared to talk about what you saw? Christine?
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I apologize. I'm at an airport. They had muted me because it's very hard, I know, for you to have the background noise.
So if you're comfortable in doing so, would you just give an overview of what you saw of the evaluations that were submitted by the group with respect to Measure 217?
Yeah.
That's great. We're ready for you.
I'm sorry, it's so noisy in the background. I think there's people shouting here. Can we wait till a little bit later?
Sure. We can wait for a few more minutes and go on to 218 and come back to 217.
Yeah, that'd be fine. This is one of the VTE measures. This is patients who received appropriate venothromboembolism prophylaxis. This is different than the other where it's basically where it was ordered, and looking at you know, is it actually in place? Was it appropriate given the criteria for the patient? Was it appropriate to have them? And for 24 hours after intervention. And so just briefly looking at what everyone's commented on, it was overall it's very acceptable, and I don't think anyone felt otherwise that it was a problem as far as a reasonable thing for everyone to be doing. And there was no real sense of that. There were some comments about that there has been a significant improvement and the performance gap is narrowing, and the question is, is this coming to topped out? I don't know if the data actually completely supports that, but it is certainly improving. And so that would be one thing to consider. From all the criteria I could review, I felt that it was, and most of the people on the call did feel that it measured what we wanted it to measure. There is good scientific rationale for use of appropriate VTE prophylaxis in the post-op setting, although certain groups have a different view, namely orthopedic literature now very strongly is supporting, and the American College of Orthopedics, I can't remember, has actually put out a position statement that they view that aspirin-only therapy is appropriate for patients who have had total joint replacement. They have fairly good literature in the orthopedics, but it certainly did not get approval by the CHEST guidelines in its most recent review. And from dealing with that in a large institution right now, I mean, that's one of the big things is the orthopedic group. And they want to add aspirin-only therapy. And so I think that's the only thing in the literature right now that is controversial and might be something that could be brought up. I think the data gathering aspects, the criteria, inclusion and exclusions criteria, which are quite extensive for this measure, are reasonable. Again, the burden of people trying to collect this data is actually quite difficult. I spoke with our data collectors here, and we've taken a different approach. We basically just mandated everybody gets it. So the inclusion and criteria are pretty extensive, and so I don't know about the burden on data gatherers if that's something to consider, but it certainly is well thought out. People who are excluded are clearly excluded for good reasons, at least in my view of it. So I think from that point of view, the criteria are met. The testing and analysis section, this has been in place for a while now. As I mentioned earlier, the data would suggest that performance is improving across the country, and most people are in the 90-plus percent range, and the question is it topped out? I think this would be something we should really push even higher. But the quality scores are in the 90-91 region, the performance in 2009. Usability, again, it seemed fairly clear. I think people understand it. It's measured and promoted on a whole bunch of different forums for patients and hospitals to share. And so I think from that point of view, it's something people can understand. And the outcome is certainly something we can also measure. So it is directly related to an outcome. The only thing that's not included is, are there drawbacks? Are there bleeding events that could be associated with this? I don't know how you would collect that data, but that would be one of the criticisms is people saying, well, we're doing this and pushing this. Are there other – what are the downsides? And I don't know exactly how we would get that. That's something we track, and we haven't found it, but that could just be unique to our institution. But overall, I thought everyone sort of agreed with this as a good proposal, good data collection, a reasonable clinical measure to do. The goal, what is the goal for saying is this topped out? I would say 90% is good, but it could be better. And I also think the other big issue out there is this aspirin-only therapy in certain groups. Orthopedics is, when their whole national society comes out and says that, and that becomes a difficult issue to sort of address. And that's it, other than that. Anyone there?
Any other comments?
This is Ruth. I just have a side comment. You know, you address the burden on data gatherers, and if you do not have electronic systems that allow you to pull this data out, it is difficult. We try to really look at the incidence of DVT in our patients in the ICU and post-surgery and try and link them to, you know, obviously there's some patients who have contraindications to pharmacologic prophylaxis measures, and so you're just using TED hose and thrombolytic stockings and such and sequential compression devices. And it was very difficult to try and trace incidence of DVT to VTE prophylaxis, which is really the ultimate goal of this. You want to do the prophylaxis to prevent a DVT post-surgery. So I agree there's some issues with respect to burden on data gatherers depending on their systems, but nonetheless, it's a measure of, you know, high value.
Other comments? Okay, Christine, let's try again. Okay, Christine. At the risk of cheating Christine of a golden opportunity, it sounds like this is going to be difficult for her.
Hello?
Christine?
No, I can barely hear you. I so apologize. My flight was delayed, and so I arrived. I am having a hard time hearing you. I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's do this, Christine. Let's let the, you go ahead and go back on mute, and we'll let the group take a look at the comments that were provided across the group and have any conversation that they would like to have around those. If there are particular items you would want to highlight, just come off mute and highlight those, and know that at the meeting you will be leading off with the discussion of this. So any comments from the group as a whole around the evaluations or the comments made at the time of evaluation?
Well, this is Ruth again. I think, and this was pertinent from our other discussion, I think one of the things that came out in the comments is the issue that, you know, the information and data collection and electronic health record data collection is an aspect of consideration. But otherwise, you know, the measures of significance.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, if there aren't any other comments on that one, I'd offer to Christine one last opportunity if you wanted to just make your comment, knowing that you may not hear us, but we can hear you. Any comment you particularly want to make, Christine?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello, I'm still here.
Yep. Can you hear? It's not working.
I will just, I'm not sure if you can hear me, but I will say I will be prepared to lead the discussion. This
okay.
Indicator.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for trying to overcome the barrier that you're dealing with there today.
Must be worse for you.
Interesting. You can thank you very much. So, any last comments from any of the group? So, Alexis, I'm going to turn it back to you for a public comment period and the closing comments that you have, and I'm available if there are any last questions for me as well.
Okay. At this time, we will now have public and in-queue member comment. If we have any members on the phone outside of the steering committee that has any comments, Okay. I guess not.
I actually have a question. This is Steve.
Yes.
This is my first time at this. Several mentions were made about quote-unquote topped-out measures and concerns about that with some of these, and that seems to be a growing concern just generally in this space. What are the procedures and processes that will go on at the meeting later this month around that? I mean, is that's just part of the process?
Yes, it is part of the evaluation criteria process, looking at the performance gap in the current compliance on measures. Melinda, did you want to add anything to that?
No, but other than to say it definitely is going to be one of the topics of discussion. And as I said earlier, regardless of the performance, there will also be the opportunity to discuss whether or not, in light of the performance, it's appropriate to retire the measure as far as endorsement is concerned, or whether or not there's still good to continue to collect and press that.
Thanks.
Are there any other comments? Okay. As I stated earlier in the beginning of the call, we will be emailing you the agenda for the meeting as well as some final logistics. And within that memo, we will have the designated lead laid out more clearly for you. So it will be a lot more user-friendly and readable. And that will go out either today or tomorrow. You will get that information. Does anyone have any questions about the meeting?
Maybe just to clarify, this is Ruth. If you could just give us as lead, when we come to the meeting, we do a more of an in-depth discussion, including like citing the literature, or what is the expectation in terms of on-site discussion?
It's similar to what we went today during the call. What we're going to do, we're actually going to break up the criteria. We'll have you to give the measure basics, the title, description of the measure, and to go over some of the discussion that happened today on the call.
Okay.
And to point out any themes or any issues or anything that are relevant that the steering committee as a whole should know about. And at that time, during the discussion time, you can ask the measure developers any questions to clarify anything that you felt wasn't in the evaluation form, any of the questions that you had today on the call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Excellent. I would add one thing. There really is identified about 15 minutes for presentation, discussion, and voting on each of the measures, if that gives you a sense of how much detail you would review with the group, as different from expecting that they would have reviewed materials and be prepared for the discussion.
Oh, that's helpful, Melinda. Thank you.
Could you also send, I mean, when I got all those zip folders, I basically just downloaded the one that was relevant to the group, this group. So I did not download all the compressed files of all the other measures. I thought we were going to be focusing on these, and then we would go as a group and present. But from what I heard earlier, we were supposed to review all the measures.
To some extent, yes. The expectation is that you will have, in that every member of the committee will be voting on each of the measures.
I'm just scrolling through my deleted email trying to find the one that had all the compressed files. Could you resend that one? Because I only took the file for this work group.
Sure. Who am I speaking with?
This is Bob Seema.
Okay. I'll send it to you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Are there any more questions or comments? Okay, I believe we can adjourn the conference call. Thank you, everyone, for calling in, and we'll see you on the 28th.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.